The following Dharma talk was given by Jodi Hojin Kimmel at the Zen Center of New York City. Hojin Sensei is the abbot of the Zen Center and head priest at Zen Mountain Monastery. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation or find out more about our various programs, visit us online at zmm.org/zcnyc. Thanks for listening.
This is from Cultivating the Empty Field by Master Hongjir. It's called The Misunderstanding of Many Lifetimes. Emptiness is without characteristics. Illumination has no emotional afflictions. With piercing, quietly profound radiance, it mysteriously eliminates all disgrace. Thus, one can know oneself. Thus, the self is completed. We all have the clear, wondrously bright field from the beginning. Many lifetimes of misunderstanding come only from distrust, hindrance, and screens of confusion that we create in a scenario of isolation. With boundless wisdom, journey beyond this. Forgetting accomplishments. Straightforwardly, abandon strategies and take on responsibility. Having turned yourself around, accepting your situation, if you set foot on the path, spiritual energy will marvelously transport you. Contact phenomena with total sincerity, not a single atom of dust outside yourself. So this passage is a practice instruction by Master Hongjir, a 12th century Chinese Zen master in China. And he's talking about our true nature, how to live in openness and this subtle experiential body. He's talking to us about how to work with emotions. Emotional illumination has no emotional afflictions. And his influence was on Dogen and comes down to us in the teachings we receive here today and how we're learning beginning instruction and the beginning practice we work with is all can be traced back to Hongjir and his work with silent illumination. He's one of my favorite Zen masters, at least his writings. I often say, I would just like to lay on my back and look at the clouds and have Hongjir read me his poetry. It's just so beautiful about the ungraspable and the ineffable. And this passage brings up something that's very difficult to understand, this fusion we often have with our emotions and how they become our identity. And we freeze up this flow of energy. And he instructs us on seeing that the fusion is another illusion. How do we feel our way to awakening is very subtle, working with body and mind. It's very subtle. And Dharma is hard to understand. So we have to work at it over many lifetimes. And so we have to expand our understanding of what a body means, what openness means. What do we mean by this? What is this subtle body? That's where it took me as I was enjoying working with it, that I wanted to speak about this subtle body. Sometimes we know it as the Sambhogakaya, the energy body. It's not our emotions, but there includes our emotions. It's not our nervous system, but it's part of our nervous system. It can't be seen. And I turned to Willa Baker, Lama Willa Baker. She wrote this book called The Wakeful Body. And so I thought her presentation here would be helpful. As she says, the subtle body is like a pond, similar to the glassy surface of a mountain lake. The subtle body is mirror-like, spontaneously sensitive. It reflects every mood of your heart and mind, every physical ailment and pleasure. Its ripples are cues to your present state of your humanness. The subtle body is not purely physical, nor is it purely mental. It's an energetic layer of embodiment that bridges the body and mind. It coexists with the physical body, but it's less material, less solid. It coexists with the mind, but it's more visceral and embodied. The subtle body is not subtle because it is mysterious. It is subtle because it cannot be perceived with our dominant senses, the nose, the eyes, and ears. You cannot hear, see, or smell your subtle body. It's not an idea either. You cannot know the subtle body by just thinking about it or imagining it, but you can feel the subtle body. The subtle body is the vibratory sense of aliveness, pervading your body from your head to your toes as experienced in this present moment. Woohoo! Aliveness is happening all over your body. It includes the feelings of the air on your skin, the sense of warmth in and through your muscles and veins, your body's subtle aches, your digestion, your breath. It even includes your mood. But it is not any one of these things in isolation. So a real openness is needed, a real meditative attention to be ready to host your energy as it is. The feeling of our sentience, but we get distracted by appearances outside and rumination within and miss the quiet symphony happening. This is where Hong Chur is pointing, that by paying attention to this layer of being, this energy field, we can eventually know the oneness of the body, heart, mind. And Zazen, of course, is bringing that all together, is when we sit down, we see how they're all doing different things. Our mind's doing one thing, our body's doing something else, and over time, we start to merge body-mind experience. So this misunderstanding of many lifetimes is what? We don't understand what this is, this humanness, other than what we've learned, perhaps, but we're undoing that. That's Dharma practice. It's to find out what's true. And it's not readily right there. We have to really work it in with our life and see how it's manifesting, how the teachings apply to what we're actually experiencing. That's our student work. And you know, we're bodhisattvas on the way to Buddhahood, and that could take many lifetimes. I mean, Buddha spoke about how many lifetimes working as a bodhisattva, right? Just working on the paramitas, cultivating our virtues, screwing up again and again, and you know, doing harm and understanding that. And we just keep working that way. We keep working with ourselves. I like Mizumi Roshi. He wrote, this was Daido's teacher, about Hongzhi. The tongueless one prescribes with wordless sparklings a medicine of the non-dual existence for the bodiless ones. Put that on your cereal box. When we appreciate the effect of this medicine, we know that Master Hong Zhe's 835-year-old relics are still fresh and warm and vitally universal here with us today. So here we are today in a ceremony together. We could call this a ceremony, a coming together, a collecting of our hearts and minds, and we bring in all our trusts, our broken trusts, our indifference, everything. And this word, Latin root of ceremony is carimonia, which means with reverence, with sacredness, with healing. So we are offering a space of meditative attention to feel this subtle body in reverence and sacredness, to restore and make whole what has never been broken or separate from anything, though it may feel like it. And we might call this an undivided life. Living an undivided life. Because we can divide just about anything, right? And perhaps we know from experience we can close a divide. We can feel the belonging to everything, the non-separateness. It's a real thing. And that breaks through in many ways, in different ways. We feel ourselves maybe pendulate in that division and that unity that happens. And it can be quite subtle how we need to open to do this kind of work, to feel this energetic body without grasping as things move in and through, both in our mind, in our emotions, in our senses. And these moments where we can release our discursive, discriminating mind. We don't have to talk about everything that's happening. And we just chant. And we just walk. And we just wash a dish. And just cry. And just be as our energy is so alive. We know this. Sometimes the word wholeheartedness is used as a way of expressing virya. Virya is one of the paramitas, this joyful effort or energy. Virya is energy, and how energy becomes joyful effort, a joyful effort. So wholeheartedness, expressing this energy of connection in the body, of experiencing our aliveness, and how joyful effort comes out of that. And whatever comes through, is coursing through, is our joyful effort to open to that subtlety. It's a joyful effort to let go of the discursive mind and just feel the aliveness. Not easy. When it's moody and there's rough emotions, right? I came across a quote by Thani Sarabhiku, who is a forest monk who I really love. And a lot of people say he's tough, and he is. He has his opinions, and he could be a little crass at times, but I like him for that. He just doesn't budge. But he had this quote where he said, "The path doesn't save all its pleasure for the end. You can enjoy it now." And I was like, yay! Yay, Thani Sarabhiku. It's a pleasure to be alive. This one of the first remembrances, recollections, is that we have a precious human birth. It's rare. It's rare, but sometimes it cuts right through, and a part of you might be saying, like, no, not mine, not today. But it is, because we can feel aliveness, we have a precious human birth. But we have a lot to sometimes get through and be with to get to that subtle body that's happening, if you follow. And we have so many examples of people who understand this, who have been in horrific situations. You know them, you've read them, and can have this happiness and joy that is never taken away as they're going to their death, even. That's unavoidable. That part will not be taken from them. Those are the stories I like to read. They're not taken by the appearances. They live in the subtle body. It said that Pisces live in the subtle body. Hongzhi teaches, illumination has no emotional afflictions. The emotional body is a wonderful way to enter into anything and everything. And it needs to be seen. And some of us, when we were growing up, I don't know about you, but I was always told, you're so emotional. I don't know if you got that. And then I would get more emotional when my mother said that, because I would be upset that she's like making a comment about how I feel and my emotions. So I get more upset. And I often said, if she said these words to me today, I'd say, thank you. It's true. Let's not pretend. And that relaxes me, because I'm in touch with my subtle body. It's true. I feel my emotions. I am feeling them. And it's my present state of humanness. Can I feel them without grasping onto what exactly it is, naming it? So as we come into a practice such as this, we can sit down with our emotions and feel them without holding them. Just feel what's happening in the energetic body. It is possible. Being awake on the level of emotion, we're not deriving a sense of self. We're no longer deriving a sense of self from how and what we feel. That doesn't define us. It's just something coursing through, an energy. But usually we get enmeshed with this sense of how we feel. And we say to ourselves, I feel angry. I am angry. But really, my sense of self is fused with my anger. That's defining me in that moment. I am angry. I fused it. And if we look even more deeply, we can actually not be defined by an emotion that runs through the body. It's freely moving, but our mind gets caught. Our mind gets caught. When we are seeing this, that's awakening through the heart. We discover what we feel, period. Awakening through the heart. We discover we feel. We feel something strong. Has this tone. And what we feel doesn't need to be avoided. And it doesn't need to define us. And the more we shut out the body, our feelings, the more we retreat to thinking. So we can open to this subtle body. Can we open to this subtle body and allow the energy and the alive sensations to just move? That's what I practice. And as it turns out, when we're no longer defining ourselves on the level of emotion, we're liberated from our conflicted feelings. But we can't get to this point by bypassing our emotions and hopes we'll get to some grand, lofty state. I'd like to appear that way sometimes, but it's not true. Emptiness is without characteristics. Our form is empty of characteristics, but it's right now, such as it is, it's this. It looks like this. Looks like this. It's all going. It's all alive right now. But it's empty of anything fixed. Thank God. We can practice. We can change. Otherwise, we would, what's the point? We would just be like, this is it, right? Emptiness is without characteristics, illumination has no emotional afflictions. With piercing, quietly profound radiance, it mysterious eliminates all disgrace. So at the base of phenomena is non-abiding, no thingness, emptiness, formless form, non-dual. Form is exactly emptiness. Anything you look at, anything, mind form, anything, it's basis is non-abiding. And there it's mutually arising. It can come together in its whatever karmic is happening, this is what it forms like. And it changes. So it's suchness all the time, moments of suchness. So our emotions and feelings are fantastic pointers, directly revealing the heart and mind of what is unsolved in our being. And for a long time, it can be hard to accept our piercing, quietly profound radiance is operating. But it is. It's operating. But we may not have the patience to see it because we get hooked on up an appearance very quickly and move away and start speeding up. That's why we sit down, so we can slow down, so we can pause, not grasp, let it vibrate, let ourselves vibrate, just shake. And for a while in my practice, though, I hate to admit, but I will. I wanted to pretend, or at some level, that I was completely resolved, a completely resolved being. And sometimes when we come into practice and we kind of, you may have there may be an air of that, like we're Sten students, we're completely resolved. Uh-uh. And we know how painful that can be if we're just pretending that we have it all together and inside we're trembling with fear of being to be detected as a hot mess. I love when people say, I'm a hot mess. I'm like, fantastic. Yay. That is so honest. And then they go into saying like all the things they see and I'm like, there it is. Like the wisdom of like the attentiveness of what's happening is profound when people are sitting. But we don't see that as like wisdom happening too. We keep trying to fall into defining and making sense. I always say, this is very much like art practice, you know, where I keep telling people in art practice, you can stop making sense sometimes. You don't have to make sense. There is a sense. We're all there. It's all there. We're vibrating. Whatever comes out, it's there. That's why when people are stuck on poems, I say, cut it up. All the things you were working on in that poem are all there. Just go, poof, let it land, rearrange it, and there, see what happens. It's all there. You have a new poem, and you're not stuck on getting it lined up. And then you can diddle with it again. So we don't even want to be seen by ourselves that we're a hot mess. And sometimes that really is what really needs to happen. The pattern we fall into is to keep trying to define and make sense. Eventually, what's not serving us will either implode or explode, and sometimes both. It's like the earth and nature. Something has to come up really big for the natural balance to occur. And sometimes we have that in this body, these big eruptions. Sometimes they come from outside, sometimes inside, both, that help us restore the natural balance. In the last session, after a few days, there was a resident that just started weeping in the zendo. I don't know if you've ever been in a zendo, a space where you're sitting still and someone is crying deeply, like can't stop. It's just that real deep cry, and you're there with them in that cry, and nobody's trying to fix, and just letting it happen. And it went on for a bit. And then they came into face-to-face teaching. And I wasn't sure, meeting them fresh. And they had a big smile. And they said, that was so good. They said they hadn't cried like that in so long. It was so needed. And their zazen after that was just so profoundly peaceful and vibratory. They were just vibrating in a whole new way. And they didn't even know why. And I said, shh. Shh. Just let it be. Let it be. They said their mind, which was so tense, just relaxed finally with that cry. Because that was that restoring of the natural balance that they were able to let happen. You know, you just go down to the ground and you just hang on to Mother Earth and you let her rip. Of course, music does that for us too. Sometimes music can bring that out and let us release that and restore our balance. I was reading, do you know Jill Bolt Taylor? She does work on strokes, and she's a neuroscientist. It always fascinates me. She was doing all this work on strokes. Guess who gets a stroke? Her. That happens so often. Somebody's doing research on something, and it's the very thing that they need to work with. Anyway, she in her research, she wrote, the psychological lifespan of emotion in the body and brain is 90 seconds. Arise, peak, and dissipate. 90 seconds. So what does that tell us about grasping? If the whole event of emotion is 90 seconds, I don't know, that really struck me about our attachment to our thoughts and feelings, how it goes on. Many lifetimes of misunderstanding come only from distrust, hindrance, and screens of confusion that we create in a scenario of isolation. Yeah, so part of our security is in that grasping, because that's where we find our identity. It's our safety. It's our security, even if it's a painful thought. Sometimes that's our security, and we keep running that. And sometimes when we start to let go, that becomes scary, that we're actually releasing something, maybe being undivided, touching our completeness, and we get petrified of it. And so we'll sometimes jump in zazen, the body will jump, because we have to say, I'm here, or we'll have to feel our clothing, or we'll have to think something, just to come back, ground ourselves, what we think we need to do. You know, don't know mind, we always hear that a lot in Zen. Sounds really cool, don't know mind. But it's really something, and it's often sometimes terrifying to not know. We're hardwired to want to go to our head and try and figure out what is often unfigureoutable. I saw somebody wrote a book when I passed by the store on Lafayette. It said, everything is figureoutable. I thought that was a strange title. I was like, really? Interesting. There was a little story I read once that demonstrates the power of our beliefs. It was about a little boy who once said to his mother, I've told this before, Mom, imagine you're surrounded by a herd of hungry tigers and all wanting to devour you. What would you do? And she says, oh, I would be terrified. I wouldn't know what to do. What would you do? And the little boy replied, I'd stop pretending. I'd stop pretending. And of course, these days we're just full, inundated with a flow of information. It's the info era. And I read that when you order a single cup of coffee, organic decaf, vanilla, latte, extra hot, we make more decisions than our grandparents made in a week. I thought that was to think about that. So ponder the level of connections that our brains and hearts are trying to digest. In 1 month, we are connected to more people online, in person, than our ancestors were in their entire lifetime. No wonder we're overwhelmed. No wonder we're knocked off balance emotionally, especially if we're not walking around unaware of what's going on in us, just like a leaf blown. Straightforwardly abandon strategies and take on responsibility, relaxed and very clear. No need to create or manage. I was remembering a meeting, I don't know, this came up, with a Polish sculptor in Poland when I went, and I wanted to meet her. Her name is Magdalena Abrakanowicz. I don't know if you know her. She passed in 2017, but she does these works with like chainsaws and drills and like works on like boulders and metal and wood, like really huge sculptures. And she does these, a lot of like very natural materials like burlap, dirt, resins, felt, newspaper. And she does like lots of figures, like armies of figures, because her work is a response to the horrors she experienced growing up in World War II in Poland and the subsequent communist rule in Poland. So her work was figures without heads, armies of them, no heads. And I asked her, when I saw her, I said, why don't you put heads on your figures? And she said, because the body's what tells the truth. You could never trust what the head was saying. So you would learn to watch the body and feel the subtle body as what was communicated. And And when I met her, I brought her a gift and I wrapped it in newspaper. And she was so happy about that, that I didn't use wrapping paper, that I used this very common material. And she says to me, let me see your hands. And so I gave her my hands, and she examined my hands, and then she went, you passed. I think she wanted to see, because I said I was working in clay and stuff, did I actually use my hands? Or was I just talking about it? It's very interesting. She also was, somehow, I think she said, my head to her looked like a boulder. And she, at one point, she kept saying, can I put my hand on your head? And she had these very, her hands were like, can you imagine? Because she's working with these materials. Her hands were like boulders. So her hand would go, pum. And she would just like, kung, 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 just like feel the shape of my head. Like, and it would just come out of nowhere. I'd be walking and she'd go, pum. She's like, fascinating. She'd just feel my head. I really liked meeting her. Buddha asked us to look at what we crave, the second noble truth, dukkha, to look at our habits, our cravings, our hunger patterns that get us stressed out, so we can know them and see how they take us away. Buddha said, when we begin to crave, we become ignorant. You know that feeling when you lose your wisdom? When you're in such a desire mode, like, or an emotional mode, like you don't get, you lose your smarts, I do. It's like your wisdom, it's like, where is it? It's like suddenly we can't access it. And we're just not flowing with what is being put into our lives. Feel the subtle body of energy, not the content so much. No need to create or manage. Albert Einstein had this quote where he says, insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. And I always said, I want to be insanity. If I want to be insanity, insane, so that means I have to not do the same thing over and over again. That's being insanity. We all have the clear, wondrously bright field from the beginning. So if we find ourselves saying it shouldn't be like this, it shouldn't have happened, that's the divide, because it has happened. It is like this, but that has to be open. If we fight what is, we never win. And sometimes we're arguing with something that happened 20 years ago. How's that going? So I want to end with a story about Mahasattva Fu. Mahasattva Fu was a brilliant scholar in China. And when he was lecturing one day to a group of people in the Parinirvana Sutra, people came from a great distance to listen to him. And in the middle of the talk, a monk starts laughing hysterically. Can you imagine you're giving a talk and then someone just starts laughing hysterically on the Parinirvana Sutra? So few quickly finished his lecture and went back to his quarters and asked his attendant to bring the Zen monk in for tea. And when the monastic came in, Fu said, I've studied these sutras for the last 20 years, and I've studied with great masters here in China. What was it you saw? Why did you say that it was wrong? The Zen monastic said, you didn't say anything wrong. What you said was absolutely true, but it's all talk. It's obvious you don't know the thing itself. You don't see the thing itself. And Fu, this wonderful man, says, what can I do so I can experience the thing itself? Because he's talking about this lofty Parinirvana Sutra. And the monk's laughing because he's just talking about it. He said, you should stay in your quarters and sit zazen. And if you do that for 10 days, I'll bet you see what I'm pointing to. Abandon all your thoughts. Have no discriminations. Just see into your inner world. And Fu did that. He told his attendant not to bother him. He went to his room and he sat zazen. And after several days, sitting late at night, he heard a flute playing in the courtyard. And he ran over to where the Zen monastic was staying and he knocked on the door. And the monastic said, who is it? And Fu said, it's me. And the monastic said, well, who are you? And Fu said, I'm myself. To which the monastic responded, what kind of drunk are you carousing around here late at night? Go back to bed. And he slammed the door. So Fu went back to his room and wrote a poem. He wrote, in those days I remember when I had not yet had, when I had as yet no satori, no realization. Each time I heard the flute played, my heart grieved. Now I have no idle dream over my pillow. I just let the flute player play whatever tune he likes. That's it. When I had as yet no satori, each time I heard the flute played, my heart grieved. Now I have no idle dream over my pillow. I just let the player play whatever tune they like. What I love about this story is Fu's surrender and his readiness to experience more deeply that there's more to see. The more we awaken at the heart-body level, the more we awaken one of the deepest callings. Hongzhi offers this. Directly arriving here, you are able to recognize the mind-ground-dharma field that is the root source of the 10,000 forms germinating with unwithered fertility. All this that we see just can keep germinating, the 10,000 forms just germinating with unwithered fertility. These flowers and leaves are the whole world. So we are told that a single seed is an uncultivated field. Do not weed out the new shoots, and the self will flower. So our sadness, our loneliness, our fear, our anxiety, whatever we want to name or call something, are not mistakes. They're not obstacles on the path. That is exactly the path. Engaging what arises, staying grounded to the earth, seeing there's nothing to be rid of, and really appreciating the information our emotions carry. Be willing to be more intimate at an embodied level, in an embodied experience, and see nothing is missing, nothing's out of place, nothing needs to be sent away. And in that way, we can continue because, as he says, this spiritual energy will marvelously transport us to experience something clearly. We're not trying to stop to have unpleasant feelings or stop something from happening. It has no goal other than itself. Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening. For meditation supplies such as cushions, incense, liturgical instruments, Dharma books, and more, visit monasterystore.org. Support for your spiritual practice at home.